as for who ran the party, well, it was more or less bundled what he wanted, except when a few people like me made it his wife, because this thing never came up.
What about A.P. De Silva,
A.P.
Jayasurya,
C.P. De Silva,
Did Banda devote much attention to organizational factors, or was he?
No, I don't think he had the capability. Even as Prime Minister on economic affairs or organization of any sort, he was utterly useless. For making an excellent speech, yes. And spreading a lot of verbiage, yes. There were lots and lots and lots of words which conveyed nothing sometimes. I remember very distinctly when he was given an honorary degree at Peradeniya. I happened to be at that convocation. And I was seated next to one of his ministers. After the speech, I asked him, I said, how much more do you know after the speech than you knew before? He had written nothing. Problem within a problem and something else, he speaks extremely well.
Did you ever feel sometimes he gets intoxicated with his own words?
I couldn't say. That he's a good, excellent speaker, yes. There's no getting out of that. But I don't think this country would have come to these straits if he had a little bit, even slightest idea of administration.
With regard to the formation of the Republican Party, retrospectively, I was wondering whether it was a wise move in the sense that though there were several parties, I was wondering if there was room for another party like that.
No. We were opposed to the UNP. Believe me, when I left government service at that time, when the UNP was the heyday of its power, I felt that there's no place in this country for us. I felt that very strongly. I'm a UNP member now. I was in a very awkward position. I'm not a Marxist. We got a middle party going because of that. And the middle party turned out to be worse than anything else. And what else was to people like me to do except join the UNP?
How do you explain the fact that you won the by-election at Balapiti, was it?
Yes, Balapiti.
And then...
And lost my deposit this time?
Yes.
Quite easy. Number one was I chucked up my job as acting director of education. Well, the teachers throughout the country felt that the short time I was there, that they got a fair deal. Even now I meet occasionally a teacher, he says, sir, it's only after you came that I got my salary in time. Then there was a feeling, it's what we were to say, that the administration of the department had improved enormously after I went there. So I had a reputation in the country with the teachers. Then on top of that, I left the place. And when the election came on, the UNP started moving teachers around, thinking that they were working for me, you see. And the result was that teachers were not working also. People felt, well, this chap did a good turn to us. We must do something for him. I think the teachers to a man were my election machine without, in spite of my telling all of them, I don't want any government servant to work for me. Well, the next thing, then they hoped that once I went in there, I spent my time using the DSM. Well, as I told you, I thought if one gets into a place like that, for you much more important work, and I thought that it was much better to try to organize a party against the UNP. Then also, you have to do various things for your constituents, which go against my grain. Finally, I think we lost mostly, because in a general election, the voters know. They're voting for a government. And without 10 people, we couldn't form a government.
Yes, that's what I
there's no doubt about that.
I meant that when I asked
Definitely with the 10. But then we had maybe start somewhere. Then of course, as you know, we went to the country next time with the 10. That's the time that Banda also couldn't make.
Yes.
That is why we joined for the following election.
Have you been questioned or ribbed at all on the fact that you are of a different political persuasion from your brother?
Well, how do you know? Have I been?
People have quipped on the fact
that... Oh, yeah. Why not? Why? I mean, but they all know that my of politics are entirely different. And that the difference in politics does not mean any difference in our relationship as brothers. That's what we know.
How would you explain the fact that he accepted the Marxist persuasion? Background or?
No. Again, I went to England in 1924. Mm-hmm. He came there in 25, I think. Mm-hmm. 25. Well, he went and he did history. I did mathematics. Then he must have followed his reading. And, purely and simply, in 1927 I wanted to see his service. My father insisted that both of us should sit for it. But once I passed, his interest ceased. He's got one son in the civil service. He said, you do what you like. And he did law. But originally he insisted that he must do this history with a view to the civil service. Then he was high school. I don't know how he came.
I have an impression that his Marxism grew stronger actually in the war when he was in jail.
The Samaj Samaj party at that time was certainly not Marxist. They were anti-European, anti-government, pro-Ceylonese, more democratic, more broad-based, but not Marxist.
That's in the 30s?
Yes, not Marxist, until they were kept in jail. And even then not Marxist. After they broke jails and went off to India, then they turned out to be Marxist because, we used to send him money through a person whose name I can't, not prepared to mention, and I was in government service. I mean, not that I need send my father's aid, but some of this arrangements had to be done by me after I was my brother. And I remember one day when I went to that man's place, I said, do you know, Colvin and company have traveled a lot since we knew them here. And definitely they turned Marxist to my mind in India.
Yes, I have that impression. It's very interesting to find that out.
You see, this is, I think you can take this, you can ask him. Mm-hmm. But that's my, he may have had read and this and that. As a matter of fact, I remember I was traveling in India just before he was imprisoned, just before the war. And at the Mangalore railway station, I saw copy of Karl Marx's Das Kapital, two volumes. I bought it to read it, but I found it very heavy going. And I had it with me. Then when he was kept in jail, one day when he was, I took it to him. And I had never seen the Das Kapital, and I took it with him. It was lost in the, left in the jail. I don't know, I haven't seen it since.
Being in government at that time, did you feel you were in a peculiar position?
No, I don't think so. Many people have asked me that with a the fact of his anti-government work and all that, I'm not aware. Certainly in my official affairs with the powers that be, for instance, I certainly am not aware. And there was no reason for them to be, because except for my dealings with him as a brother, and I had no politics at all.
CID didn't try to follow you when he broke jail and things like that?
I heard a long time afterwards from fellow very high up in the police now, that we had instructions to go one day and inspect my estate to see whether he was hiding there in equality.
Turning to the short period when you were director of education, that was 47, was it?
Long ago, but I forgot.
And you retired in 54?
Mr. Roberts, I can't remember. Oh, I retired. I tell you, it must have been about
49 or
48.
49.
49 or 48. Mm-hmm.
Just after the new, after independence?
Yeah, after independence. Okay. 2 years after. I was in that education department only for 10 or 11 months,
What were the principal aims of policy at that time?
Education policy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There was, of course, C.W.W. Kannagar's Education Act, where now they are talking about this new education policy. He had put those things down in the act. This following the English thing about this teaching, the breaking children off into different streams for academic work and practical work and all that kind of thing. But no one would have the practical. The parents wouldn't have it, and it wasn't so, it wasn't pushed back, so about it. I'm not aware of any positive policy except to try to see the administration going, and the administration was stopping.
Yes,
you send a letter, no reply, you send a reminder, no reply, all goes to the same clerk and he just throws them away. Nobody could get anything done.
Mm-hmm. Any other obstacles?
How do you mean?
Well, towards the obstacles in the way of the policy being implemented, apart from bad administration.
I do not know. I mean, if you know that you ask me, I hadn't time to sit down and think what policy they had in view. I went there, there was the education department, there were government schools, there were assisted schools, and they were running in a certain way. But certainly the administration of the department was very inefficient for the running of it. And all my time was taken up on that. I wasn't there long enough to sit and think of... but I was there, I did this. I think I did that, and I take more pride in that than all the reforms in administration. I felt very strongly that our children's education wasn't sufficiently, hadn't a sufficient scientific bias. You see, no one in this modern world can live, however low his education is, or having some idea of an electric light, motor car, this, that and the other. You know, that's just as much as learning to read and write was essential for a person, say 100 years ago, to live. Well, some basic notion about the sciences is also necessary for a man to live intelligently. However low the educational level he may have been able to reach at school. So I got a lot of science teachers together, including H.J. Vijay Singh, who was science master at Royal College, who was, I have no idea, pretty much channel. He was my science master at Royal, and several other science teachers. And we got a syllabus to teach children from the practically the kindergarten, you know, just to introduce them slowly, little by little, into this. Well, I don't know what happened after I left. There was a very useful committee's report. Then another thing I did that day was, of course, now the examinations department was difficult. I suggested 15, 18 years ago now to mechanize that work. If they did it, then now I was very agreeably surprised some years ago when my children, my eldest boy, sat for the London advanced level to find his results come exactly as I had envisaged, you know. At the time the marking is done, the result slip for the candidate is also ready. Those days to get your detailed results took months, and then copying errors, and sometimes deliberate, sometimes actual errors. But apart from that, I couldn't say that.
What about the role of the assistant schools? Did you feel it difficult to control them?
No, I don't think so. Except that I felt they were favored in this sense. You see, all this staffing of schools is done on what are called units of average attendance. They divide the, you know, they take the number of children present at school each day and divide it by the number of days that the school was open, which gives you the average unit of attendance. Now, I can't remember the figure, but I think I'm fairly correct. For a government school, for one teacher, the number of units was 28, and for assisted schools, it was 22. I didn't see any reason for that, and I remember taking it up at the Board of Education meeting. And I remember, I mean, most of those people were assistant school teachers. Now I remember E.R. De Silva, principal of Whitman College. He had all howled, and I said, we must arrive at, if it's too expensive, let's make the 22-25 and the 28 and the 28-25. They howled. Apart from that, I didn't see. Of course, they had better buildings and all that, except for Royal College, because, you know, that. There are various societies, maybe religious, maybe others who are out to help. But I think the training and the background they give is better than the government school. The government school was far too impersonal. Now, I was at Royal for 3 years. I don't know, and I came there from St. John's Carnival. Contact with the principal had with the students at St. John's was very much more than the principal at Royal had with us.
What about free education? Were there any doubts at that stage about...
No, that was there, of course, all the time. There was a doubt of how to find the money. That's She was from Lucifer. Education department was, I was just pitchforked there, there was no question of. I wasn't even asked whether I would like to come. I was once, when I came to Colombo, A.J. Srinivasan said, you know, we are considering you for a job. So I said, are you asking me whether I'd like to come or I, what is it, if I asked you all the jobs? He said, don't you know, civil service, you are to go. Then I said, don't waste my time, I'm going. I didn't even know what the job was.
Turning to another sphere, what is your opinion on the Donamo constitution and the executive system within it?
I think that's too much log rolling. You know, for everything they are canvassing. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult, I think, for a minister, for a board of ministers to carry out its policy. Now, I was secretary to the Communications and Works Ministry, mm-hmm. Kutalal was the minister. He had to have a certain majority, and they had to be, so you know, things which he would probably not like to do, and I'm speaking not of him particularly, but any minister, you probably have to do in order to make sure the vote. And that is why it was given up.
And did it tend to slow things up? Slow decision making?
I would like to say so.
Could a minister, for instance, do something and then come to this committee for approval?
It depends on how much support he has in the committee, no?
Did Sir John tend to examine it?
I can't tell you that he... Most things came up first and were decided. There may have been occasions, but I can't recall it. Don't forget now, in that committee, he couldn't dominate quite in that way. He had phone number, I remember.
Any other?
Well, I can't remember. I remember people. Major Kothalal, Sir John. G.G. Ponnambalam, D.P. Jayasurya, S. Vaikyalingam, A.E. Gunasingha,
So he couldn't have his own way?
I suppose he did somehow, but I can't say.
Yeah, but how did you find him as a minister?
Very nice man. Extremely pleasant man.
Was it?
And I like to tell you, I went there with a prejudice against him. Very pleasant man.
I was wondering whether he was an airy type and tended to forget about details or even some necessary things and take breezy decisions.
No. He was prepared to listen. You know, invariably that ministry had a PWD man as secretary for a long time, until when Kothalawala came there, Vaidyanathan came there as secretary. The first civil servant to go there was Vaidyanathan. Then C.A. Vikram Singh, under whom I was working as assistant land commissioner, had been asked by Kothalawala that Vaidyanathan's term was more or less up. Could you suggest somebody? And C.L. had suggested my name. C.L. told me that. He came and told me, well, I have suggested your name for this. I promptly told him, what little I heard of him, I'm not particularly, what should I say,
enthusiastic.
I'd much rather do my term without being secretary or minister. I'm not really interested, but I have to go. He said, oh, no, don't say that. He said, if I knew you were a certain man, go. So I had never protested in regard to any transfer. If I ordered, I went. I went there. And I found he had been very pleased with Vaidyanathan's work. Because after all, we bring a different angle to bear. Our PWD would think only in terms of this. And I found him very pleasant to work. You listen to whatever you have to say, you make a decision. I found that it was much easier because, you know, his education was extraordinary. I found that when I needed not take a system up, but he sent for me a day or two and said, Silva, I can't read your handwriting. Well, I tripped what the trouble was. It was not that he couldn't read my handwriting, but that reading was an effort. I know that that was so with ODSM. I knew that. So after that I never minuted on papers and I went to the tap or like any important paper, I took and discussed it. And then wrote a minute on it. I don't think he ever read it, he just took a sense of tea. Stuck his initial on it. I don't think he was bothered.
I think is it true that he probably read skipping lines?
Yes, what? I see him reading a paper, reading something typewritten. He reads two words and misses off three. That's what I told him. I must say that I was there about 18 months. He never took a decision that I thought was unwarranted by the facts, except on one occasion. I would like you to switch off.
I noticed that you were additional secretary to the Board of Ministers for a short time.
That was for post-war development. That was during the war, like the planning ministry now, I was entrusted with that. And I was drafted onto that and I found went there with a lot of enthusiasm because a really good job, you can do something. Mm-hmm. Where it took me about 3 months, it was quite clear to me that the only person who was actually interested in post-war development as an integral whole was Haksum, the financial secretary. Other ministers were not interested except in their day-to-day work and looking forward to that kind of thing. I must say it's like every minister.
Even Brayton and Nainggolan?
No, they were not there. At that time, Haksum was
financial
secretary. I think Collins was the chief secretary and the legal secretary. I forgot who was the chief secretary. Nainggolan? No, earlier than that.
So did Collins show any...
Of course, he had nothing very much to do because from the financial point of view, Haksum was and he took a lot of interest. I'm afraid I was there for some months, maybe 6 months or a year. I went to be very disappointed. And I was very glad later on when Banda asked me to come to the Prime Minister. The same reason. You know, it's a real decent work you can do if you can get it.
Yes, in fact, what were Haksum's and your ideas with regard to post-war?
Well, for one thing, I went into the question of those days we were doing a lot of work on colonization. Well, I went into it and pointed out that the manpower required for opening colonies could never be available. There are no bulldozers and all that then. You had to use men. Now, I went into it from the point of view of manpower. Haksum being financial secretary, I said, Silva, I think post-war, those days the labor rates must have been 45 to 67. The state labor rate at 125, how many million rupees? Was his question in regard to this particular thing. But he took an interest.
Did you attend any committee meetings of the Board of Ministers?
No, once I was called for something or other. I forgot. That was when I was in food control.
Pardon?
When I was in food control. No, they were not that interested. Senanayake was interested in the politics and getting freedom and all that kind of thing. The others were interested in there. But working together as well, even as cabinet ministers, I think most of these people are not interested in the whole machinery, integration. Prime Minister, I think he is definitely, but to what extent he can impose that, even I don't know.
In fact, I meant to ask you something about DS's agrarian policy.
Yeah.
How would you describe them and what would you say about them? I would like to comment on his emphasis.
Well, I would say that D.S. Senanayake got all the money he wanted for his colonization schemes. But I think they are fairly wasteful. I feel that a more educated minister would have had much more to show for the money spent. On the other hand, I must say this, The educated minister would have seen the difficulties and all that and not gone for them as DSPs. You know, there are disadvantages of education. You weigh too much. Man who hasn't that and wants, you know, he sees what he wants and goes for it. He's not inhibited by the difficulties. I'm quite certain, and this is the criticism which I have leveled, because I won't level it publicly. I've leveled in government service among my friends. Then, years afterwards, at least one of them said, I say, you are right. Afterwards. If we did not open all the dry zone, of course, our food production would be enormous.
No, I was thinking that he was trying to boost agricultural production and all that by going backwards, in the sense that he had a lot of romanticism and he was trying to recreate the old Sinhalese glories and...
I'm not sure, I don't know that. I would put the reason slightly differently, he knew nothing else. You see, his background is a peasant background of Bothali and so on. And Valbothali, his village is Bothali. I remember when I was I was additional secretary, we were discussing some of this land colonization thing. So I was discussing with him. And he told me, I said, Silva, for every colonist I put on that land, I am giving employment to 5 other families. I said, in regard to the actual opening of the land, I had the figures and I can't remember now. You are giving employment. But once the colony is a settled one, no. I said, for every 4 people who are doing agriculture there, perhaps you may be finding employment for 1. He said, no. Then he said, now look at, look at the bus conductor, the barber, the dobi, and even tarnation. I promptly said, you take yourself back to Valbothali and see how many farmers there are and how many bus conductors and dobis and barbers and this and that. See, I don't think he was convinced he had got that in his mind. I just want to read the sequel. Dr. Dasgupta was then professor of economics, and he had something to do with this also. Anyhow, he was doing those village surveys. And in this position, I had the ability, I had the power to get a survey done, and I told him to do a survey of the Mineri area. And results came, and my figures were correct. My figures were based purely and simply on the previous census of the country. The whole of the country, for 4 agriculturally employed people, there's only 1 in all other employments, more or less. So it is impossible in an agricultural area to have anything else. So I got the survey.
Yeah.
When I got the result, I sent it up to the DS. DS area. After that, I went to Putnam as AGA from there. And relative of his, I don't know, by marriage or otherwise, got into civil service, and that chap was posted to Putnam as cadet. So he went to see DSC, as a social call, and he asked him, where are you posted to? He said, Putnam. I said, that was WDC was AGA there. He gave a very good training. You know, that fellow holds his opinions very strongly, and the trouble is he's right. What I this. This is Mr. Roberts, sir. This is Mr. Marshall, and this. We did this survey, and I forgot what you were talking about apart from the soil.
No, for instance, I want to really emphasize the individual peasant landholder as a means of waste production. And what wonders whether there are limits to what these...
That's true. You see, they say that this was also a political maneuver to meet communism, that a peasant backbone is always good. Well, they thought that way, I can't say, I do not know. I do also know this, that he used to have lunch with D.S. Nag every day. He was quite impressed with the Italian scheme, the colonization. You know, they had done Pontine March.